We have to figure out how we are going to live within these laws, if in fact we are going to be law-abiding citizens. And that is one of the things that I pride my people on, is that we are law-abiding citizens for the most part. We are honest, and we believe in a day's work. Now, I have given a lot of serious thought to how we, as Native people, will function in the coming years. We have to figure out how we will function. Will we be able to live our lives as our forefathers have lived them? Will we have guaranteed access to our resources? Will we be able to go up and fall fish? The only way that we can ensure that is to be our own regulators. Traditionally, we have said that as long as we don't abuse, as long as we don't oxup, we each as individuals have a right to our subsistence resources. We have to go farther than that. Unless we, as Native people all across the state, unless we come up with our own plan, number one, to regulate subsistence, number two, to provide an accurate register of how much we harvest, then all we're asking for by not doing this is we're asking the state of Alaska, the fish and game people, to regulate our subsistence. They will be able to say, you can only fish a 10 fathom net, a 20 fathom net, and you can only have one, you can't have four or five. And you can only fish from September 1st to October 1st. That's what we're asking for by not saying we can do this. We can regulate our own subsistence. And I don't know about you, but personally, I would much rather have to answer to my own people, to my own council, in regard to my use for subsistence. I would much rather where was I?
We can.
Right. We can. And we have to. We just have to decide that is what we want. Would you rather turn in your fellow native to the fish and game and have them be taken to court, to be formally charged and listed on their record that this person violated the subsistence regulations of the state of Alaska? Or would you rather go up to that person and say, I'm going to turn you in, but I'm not going to turn you into fish and game, I'm going to turn you into the tribal government. You're not doing this right. When our own people set out their subsistence king salmon gear at the point, this river mouth over here looks like it's got lace, like a necklace of nets all the way around the mouth. This year they finally did something about it, but they didn't regulate the subsistence use of the king salmon fishery. What they did this year was they restricted commercial harvest. And that's another means of dividing our people. All of us are either related to or work with commercial fishermen. And we know that they need that money. And yet Fish and Game has said, due to the extreme subsistence pressure on the king salmon resource of Unalakleet, Alaska, we are hereby changing, by emergency order, the commercial fishing times for king salmon in Unalakleet. You now are only entitled to 2 24-hour periods a week for king salmon commercial fishery. That means that Fish and Game, by regulation, is taking the money out of the pockets of your commercial fishermen and is putting more fish into the subsistence, your salmon strips, your salmon steaks. But one of these days, they're going to say each family is only entitled to 30 fish a year, 30 king salmon. They're going to do it if we don't do it ourselves. And nobody reports everything that they catch nowadays. They're supposed to be doing a subsistence salmon survey here in Unalakleet, from what I hear on the radio. And you and I don't keep track of our subsistence use of fish. Why should we? We never have before. But we have to do that. And I think this is a good place and a good time to put some ideas, since we do have representatives from Koyuk all the way down to Stebbins. This would be a good time that we, as Inupiaq people, should begin to think of, on a larger scale than as individual towns and villages. We've been talking about it amongst different things, different people, very informally, that what we should go to is a regional IRA. It doesn't have to be IRA. A regional, traditional, tribal government. And I think the number one item would be organizing as a regional IRA or traditional council. And number two, beginning to develop some means of not only controlling and regulating, but ensuring that we will always have a subsistence resource, no matter what. And we, the native people of Alaska, we know best what resources are out there. They may have one or two biologists on each river, and they may be able to give a good estimate. But what they're not remembering is that we traditionally, and will continue to do, we know what's in that river. And we can regulate that resource. Right now, this is to the Eskimo people here in Unalakleet. I think right now is you've got about a week. And right now, I think, would be the prime time to get your fall fish, because there's lots of silvers up there. But anyway, that's one of the things that I think we will eventually come to in this area is original IRA. We have to stop thinking that just because we live in different towns that our fellow Inupiaq people in those towns are not a part of us as people. We're not totally different tribes. We're all interrelated all up and down this coast, as Alfred said yesterday. We have closer ties than would appear on paper. If you were to write a report on relationships of villages in Western Alaska, and if your typical Western writer wrote it, he would say that we are all separate and distinct people. But if you write it from a native point of view, a tribal point of view, we are all interrelated. We are all one people. We just happen to live in different parts of the Norton Sound. And we do move back and forth. And I think we should not start, but get back to that. Somebody last night made mention of the fact that we should get back to our traditional ways of doing things. How we relate to each other, how we share. I have said before and I'll say it again, we are our brother's keeper. There are a lot of people here in Unalakleet that never even come to meetings like this, and yet they are the ones that live closest to the land. These are the men that travel. They trap all winter. They fish and hunt in the spring and the fall. They rarely spend time in town. Why should they? And yet these are the ones that will be most impacted by things like this. Settlement. How are they going to feel when they go out to their favorite trapline and find another city out there? Or somebody's got a hard rock mine or a placer mine. What are they going to do? Can't trap when you got somebody mining. And I've this fall I've had a chance to look at some of the most beautiful and inaccessible country in that North River. And I'm telling you, it's beautiful. And we're going to lose it. We're going to lose it. You look at what they want to open up. If we don't do something, we're going to be surrounded. And what are we going to get out of our rivers? If they allow a settlement up anywhere on the Swarovski, anywhere on in the South River, anywhere in these upper drainages, all the corporation controls is from the mouth up. And when you start ticking off acres, 165,000 acres don't go very far. Corporation land stop at Swarovski. And if you look closely at this map, and when they have their hearings here on the 18th, tell them you want a big map of this area. Tell them you want a big map. And you'll see what they're after. They're after everything that we know is up there, that we have never developed. That's what they want. I'm going to probably end up bumping heads with the federal government personally over the next few years, because they're going to have to clarify a lot of things to me. Things such as federal trust responsibility, jurisdiction, sovereignty. I, as a tribal person, feel that the only obligation that I have is not to the city, it's not to the state, and it's not to the federal government. My obligation, my only obligation, and I have devoted a lot of volunteer time and effort to it, is to the tribal government of my people. And if you look at the Constitution, and they're all the same, all the ones that they put out in the 30s, late 30s, early 40s, they're identical. All they change is the name of the village. But those constitutions say some very powerful things. A lot is made of the fact that they say that IRAs and traditional councils are racial institutions. They're not. They are political institutions, and as such, they are recognized by the federal government because that's how they set them up. Don't ever let anybody say that your IRA tribal government or your traditional tribal government, if you have no IRA, don't ever let them say it's racial. It's not. It just so happens that at the time that Congress said we will recognize tribal governments, it just so happened that at that time, each tribe was 100% Native. They didn't say you had to be. They said, okay, you are a government, you are a tribal government. We will recognize you as such and we will share monies with you. And if you look at the Constitution, the council has a right to determine who will or who will not be a member of this tribe. Each tribe, each village has that in their constitution. The federal government has responsibilities due to a number of different treaties to maintain, number one, and this is the beginning of the end. They say that they will protect our lands and resources for us. If you look at the Constitution, it says lands, interest in lands, water rights, surface rights, you name it. They said we will protect all that for you. Or you as tribal governments have a right to protect all this. ANCSA, to my way of thinking, is a federal government's way of saying, okay, we have all these responsibilities for you. We have the right, we have the responsibility to protect your lands. We have a responsibility to provide for your education. We have a responsibility to provide for your health. And if you look at the Indian Health Service Act, this is supposed to go for all time, these responsibilities of the federal government. They said that we will take care of your health, we will take care of your education for all time because we have taken over your land. We have taken over the United States, the land mass of the United States. We have taken it over and we have taken it from you. But we feel we owe you, since you were here before us, we owe you lands protection, we owe you medical care, we owe you education. They may say, we owe you all this, but what are they paying? Now they're saying that we don't have to protect your lands anymore. They say that has been signed over to a corporation, and corporation law will govern what happens to that land. Laws written by white people and for white people will govern what happens to your land, land that has always been in Native hands. If the land, if the laws are written by white people, and they are interpreted by white people, who do you think they're going to benefit anyway? It's just like Job Kukachurik said. When the white man writes a deed, you get everything from you get everything all the way to the center of the earth that belongs to you. But if you look at your native allotment, they call it a certificate. They say we give you 160 acres. But then you look at the part, but the US government reserves for itself oil and gas leasing. They can put in a railroad, they can put in a highway, they can put in a telegraph. They could put in a bridge, they could put in a canal on your allotment. They can allow oil and gas leasing on your allotment and not even have to ask you. They'll just send you a little note like this: dear box holder, such and such and so mining company is coming in and we're going to let them drill on your allotment. And you say, but you can't. And they say, oh yeah, let me see your certificate. It says, so right there, US government reserves the right to oil and gas lease, to put in bridges and roads and telegraphs and you name it. And they don't ask for the, you know, just the road to go through. They say, if we want to put a road right straight across your allotment, we'll take that center line of that road, we'll go 100 feet that way, 100 feet that way. And if it just so happens that your allotment is long and thin and they put the road down the middle, what does that leave you? You might get a little piece here and a little piece there that they haven't bothered. That's the kind of protection that the federal government is giving you. White men don't settle for deeds like that. When they buy a piece of land, that land says they own everything on the surface, they own everything under the surface, and they own everything as far as you can dig, drill, or mine. As long as it fits within the areas of your boundaries. But those white people are real tricky. Even if there's oil and gas underneath this land here, they don't have to drill for it right here. They'll go up here to the closest border, say, okay, we're going to have an oil and gas lease sale. And even though we might be sitting on the oil reserve here, they know how to drill this way. They know how to drill that way. They don't have to drill straight down. If Unalakleet's here and the oil is right there, they'll come this way. That's how they are. I'm sorry I've taken up so much time, but I did have a lot on my chest. A lot of it is going to be sometimes, you know, when they say that Congress has plenary power, Congress can do anything it wants. Yeah. I'm registered to Cook Inlet. No choice in the matter. I was over in Okinawa when they sent me my registration. And that,
were you in the Armed Forces?
I was in the Marine Corps, yes. And I was way over in Okinawa when I got this BIA enrollment letter, big packet, and I filled it out.
Was
no. I you know, I listed uniquely. Yeah.
You're a member of the Unalakleet IRA,
and in fact, since 1980, you've been a member of the IRA Council here.
Yes. As I said, that is a sole legal link that I have to this land up here anymore, other than my 160-acre allotment. And that, you know, that allotment is nice. It's a beautiful place. But that, I didn't grow up thinking that that's all that I would end up with, was a 160-acre allotment. I would rather not own land if I can roam free across everything, every river and stream, every hill, every ridge that I have walked across. I would rather not own any of it if I can wander that freely. We are the last truly free, truly independent people. The natives, the indigenous people. We are not tied to supermarkets. We are not tied to paper cash money. We are the last truly free and independent people. And the great crash of 1929 proved that. There was no cash. There were no jobs up here anyway, even if there was cash. But we didn't starve. In fact, we ate better than probably 90% of the people in the lower 48. Why? Because our lives did not depend on cash money. Our lives did not depend on a 9-to-5 job. We worked harder. Even now, we still work harder for our subsistence resources. If you want it, you work for it. And you don't work no 9-to-5. You don't say, oh, it must be lunchtime, I'm going to eat. You work till you get so damn tired you have to eat. Yeah.
I'm going to climb up the pass somewhere with the forest and worry about that. We're going to destroy the area that we do.
Yeah, they're gonna have hearings on the 20th in St. Michael's on this. Talk to your council. See if they can help. Anyway, there. This winter, I hope to be developing some means of working, developing a relationship for tribal governments, not only with the state of Alaska, which has turned a very deaf ear to tribal governments ever since the state came into being 25 years ago. They have been trying to disrupt and divide the native people of Alaska for the last 100 years. And you can see it in how they leave their own trails, they leave their own tracks. There's no mention whatsoever in the United States, in Alaska Constitution, of IRAs or tribal governments. The state says that they cannot deal with them. And yet, these organizations predate the state government by at least 25 years. And yet they will have nothing to do with them, except on a very limited basis. The federal government, whatever they may say about trying to help protect and promote Native people, their actions speak louder than their words. And they are trying to destroy us. They are. They want to be able to say that this vast and beautiful country of ours belongs to them. And as long as we keep telling them, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. We have to, but it has to be worked on in a positive, constructive means. We have to say we're willing to cooperate, but we have to lay each other's ground rules on the table and say, okay, you start from here, I'll start from here. This is my set of standards, this is your set of standards. We have to figure out where in the middle these standards are going to meet, then that we are both going to agree upon. Thank you.
I just want to say that I understand the Stebbins people have arrived and we're very glad to see you. We're going to take a 5-minute break for people to stretch, and maybe when we resume you might feel free to sit over here. It's a little easier to see and hear, and there's a lot of seats here. Okay, we'll take a 5-minute break to stretch our legs. There's some seats over here, even on the right here, if you'd like to come over, folks. Well, I just want to welcome again the people from Stebbins. We've been meeting here since 7 o'clock last night. We had a good meeting last night from 7 o'clock until about 11, I believe. And we started again at 10 this morning. And we have people not only from Unalakleet, but from Koyuk and Shaktulik and St. Michael's and Stebbins. And because we have people from out of town, we thought that we'd spend the rest of the time this morning letting people from out of town speak, since some of them have to get planes back to their own villages. So we'll carry on then, and maybe you just state your name for the record, okay. Teresa.
My name is Teresa Sakpilak Perry. I am from Shaktulik. Present population is 185. Of the 185 residents, 112 are currently enrolled to the Shaktulik Native Corporation. This does not include the non-residents of Shaktulik that belong to our corporation. A brief history of Shaktulik. During my parents' lifespan, Shaktulik has been relocated 3 times due to land erosion. Subsistence has been a way of life for generations. Subsistence is a way of existence for our people. I would like to see that the IRA councils regulate the hunting and fishing seasons for our people. ANCSCA mandating that city councils be formed has benefited Shaktulik in obtaining grants for the water and sewer project that is in the completion stage. The bad point I see is the privilege for registered voters to vote for the local option law. Continuation of laws passing such as this will make some stockholders sell their stocks in 1991 if an alternative option is not sought after. The bad points of ANCSCA is that lands will be taxed in 1991. I am afraid of lands being terminated to stockholders if taxes aren't paid or stocks are sold. It disturbs me that children born after 1971 do not automatically become stockholders. After all, children born after 1971 are descendants of our ancestors. I am for ANCSCA amendments to be passed, which should be similar or same as the original Indian Organization Act, Public Number 383-73D, Congress S-3645. Thank you.
Thank you. How many people did you say live at Shaktulik?
Currently 185, and of the 185, 112 residents are currently enrolled to the corporation.
Do you have shareholders out of town?
Yes.
About how many?
Probably about half of 112.
And they live in Unalakleet, Anchorage, Seattle, that sort of thing?
Yes.
Do you think that the people who live out of town are more likely to sell their shares in 1991 than the people who actually live in the village? Or do you think it makes any difference?
I don't think it makes any difference, as I stated, you know, with the if the state continues to pass laws such as the local option laws for the villages, I could see stockholders selling their shares to, you know, for money to go to Nome and drink, since it is illegal to drink in Shaktulik right now.
And you have an IRA council in Shaktulik?
Yes, we do. I am the vice president of the IRA council.
And did you say you're an officer of the corporation too?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
I.
But you have a corporation there?
Yes, we
yeah.
do.
Yeah. Just tell me, does the corporation have any businesses in Shaktulik? Does it have a store, or does it do this, or does it do that? Does it employ anybody?
Up to date, they employ one person. He runs the, he sells oil and gas.
Mm-hmm. Right, thank you very much. Could we keep your written statement, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
My name is Clifford Tom. I'm from St. Michael. And I thank Honorable Tom Burgess for being here to listen to our point of view from everyone that have, whether they dislike Land Claim Settlement Act when it started. When they start enrolling people, I didn't even understand what was going on. It went so fast. What is Land Claim Settlement Act? When they asked me to enroll. And when they asked me to enroll, they asked me, where are you going to enroll? Regional or at large? I didn't even understand it. It went so fast. And it hurts because we didn't understand it. And when I started asking questions, what is Land Claim Settlement Act? And they said, you're going to get the land and a lot of money. That's good. Boy, that's land. They're going to give me land. They're going to give me money. Sure. And my first check comes. It was less than $200. And I expect more. And today, a lot of people are asking me, when are we going to get that money? It's only a promise. And you know, it's just like in a piece of paper. And it hurts a lot of people. Where that money going to come from? And because they didn't understand it. I don't have much to say, but because a lot of people already have said their point of view, just like it came out from my own mind. And I thank them all, as brothers and sisters, as Eskimo. Yes, it hurts. Many people in this land claim Settlement Act because of 1971. Some not even enrolled. Yeah, when the children get their money from the capital distribution or what? What else could come from? It hurts the other children also. Sure, your own children, they get hurt because they're not enrolled. That's what I dislike, my point of view. And that's Land Claim Settlement Act. A lot of them get hurt because they didn't receive money as an Eskimo, what they are entitled to do so. These are my point of view, what I dislike on the Land Claim Settlement Act, because a lot of us didn't understand it. Even my wife didn't understand it much, because she's got two boys that have not enrolled, and they're 11 years old. Whenever they get the money, or from the capital distribution, or whatever they get it from, it hurts. I think a lot of people are talking about land, and tribal council, what we have, what do they call IRA. I'm looking at that point too. And I'm hoping, let's uphold it. If it work out, it might work out good for us. And as I look and I start thinking about these lands, what they are opening today, because we'll have joint meetings all over Alaska again about these things, what is happening coming on this month. October 20th at St. Michael. Right in front of your eyes, before 1991 becomes, you're losing your land already. You're losing your rights already. You can see that if you think. It started already before 1991. You're losing your land already before taxation comes. We only got one store and one duplex at home. It's not enough. If we don't have enough investments before 1991 comes, where are you going to get the money to pay the tax? That's what I'm worried about myself. When I start understanding about Land Claim Settlement Act, I worry about 1991, what's going to happen. If all Wall Street come from New York someplace with a lot of money and wanted to buy your stock, hold it, don't sell it. You're going to lose your rights because of that. Your stock is sold. That money would be gone. You have no more rights for your own. You'll be just like the way you used to be. You'll be the same way because of that stock you have sold. Hold on to it. I urge you to hold it. Give you a reasonable first thing if you want to sell it. Your reasonable first thing or your corporation. That way you won't lose it. I urge you to think about your tribal councilman, your tribal IRA council. Let's represent them because they're old. Before the city comes around, they're the first one to start things for us. What they have wrote on that paper, what Al handed to Berger, is the one good thing that they have found that, and I'm glad that everyone have point of view on what they have carried in their heart. This is the time to spill it out so you won't carry nothing when you get home. And I'm glad everybody can speak out because of their own rights. And I thank you all that I can sit here and bring my point of view. I thank you all, and God bless you.
Hello. My name is Bibiana Washington. I'm from St. Michael. I'm an IRA trainee. Excuse me. I would like to welcome you here to Uniclete and all the neighboring peoples of the Great Land. I really respect this opportunity to express, of expressing my opinion. We as our Aboriginal people are concerned in and in our looking towards our very own survival, known for the generations. As the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act wasn't meant to be instituted, that was pertaining to the IRA Act that was amended in 1934. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act wasn't supposed to be brought up because they constituted that law that the lands was our lands, and